Good morning, Jeremy and Joe.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning, guys. How you doing?
Hello there.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, guys. How you doing today?
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hi, guys. Great show. Love it.
Good morning, guys. Big fan of the show.
What's better than this? Guys being dudes.
Call or text WGR at 803-0550 or post on X at WGR550 and get connected to Jeremy and Joe now.
Hey, everybody. Jeremy and Joe, beautiful day out there. Great day to do something outside. It's a high of 85 today, partly cloudy, some air quality issues.
I think it's supposed to start clearing today, but I think there's still an alert.
The air quality?
For air quality, yeah.
All right.
Maybe it is still
going. The 10-day forecast on my phone.
Doesn't it like all look the same?
Yes. It's almost like the same day for the next 7 days. High of 89 in the next week. Some rain here or there. The stadium on Saturday, by the time we're at that game, high of 86. So one thing about the new stadium that we talk about the canopy and the cover for the elements.
Mm-hmm.
How about for a day when it's 87 and you're in the shade? That'll be a part of it too.
Yeah.
Sometimes if you've been to that stadium on a really hot day on the sun side, you know, the bleachers can get hot.
Yeah.
You may be shedding layers. I can remember being at a game in pants. Jeans once when it was really hot, and I was like, I gotta go home. I'm uncomfortable.
Wow, in the middle of a game?
That might have been preseason.
That makes more sense.
Why was I wearing jeans? I don't know.
In a preseason game that would have likely been in August.
Maybe I thought it was cool and it wasn't.
Yeah.
Maybe it was an October game.
There was, remember the Dolphins playoff game here was obviously in January, Skylar Thompson?
Yeah.
That game, I was sitting directly in the sun, and it was winter, so it would have been cold. So I showed up with winter jacket, snow pants even, and I think by the end of the game, I had stripped down to just wearing the jeans I was wearing underneath and the t-shirt that I had on top. Like, I was sitting in the stands in January with a t-shirt on because it was just that hot sitting in the sun. Also, that game took forever, so... I think it like set the record. I think it's like one of the longest Bills games in history.
The Skylar Thompson game?
Yeah, like it was long. We were in the sun for like 5 hours.
Dolphins had a second half lead in that game?
Yeah, they did.
On a scoop and score by who?
Ooh.
What Dolphins defender scoop and scored on a fumble? The Bills fumbled like inside their own 10.
Yep.
And why do I say it was like a
single? It's not Wilkins, right?
No, I thought it was like a single-digit linebacker.
Here we go.
That
Zach Sealer.
Okay. It was not. He just got a big contract extension.
Yeah, Zach Sealer. It was a 17-yard sack and then a 5-yard return. That put the Dolphins up in the third quarter 24-20. So they had a lead.
In the playoffs.
In the second half. How different would the relationship with the Dolphins be had they won that game?
If Skylar Thompson had beaten them?
Tua didn't do it, but Skylar Thompson did. And the Bills lost the next week anyway. They'd still have 6 straight division championships. But there would have been a weird lost playoff game in there along the way. Maybe it wouldn't be any different.
Well, regarding the new stadium, we've got some questions for Pete Guelli to ask him on Thursday when we're back out at training camp. The canopy, I'm sitting here thinking about the canopy. I'm thinking about the new stadium a lot. I got a pair of seats. I got my seats in the upper deck, under the canopy, thinking about, I used to love sitting way up there and seeing the full field, and the elements got to be, if you're in the upper deck, the wind is tough.
Yep.
Of course, like you're never protected from anything. And now those seats up there under the canopy, I'm excited. So
yeah,
I waited until it was my turn, went through, took a look, and I got a pair of seats in the upper deck.
Do you know like how in the sun, out of the sun, your seats still are?
That I don't know.
You know that you're under it, protected from rain.
Yeah, probably depends on time of day.
Yeah.
I would have to see like the simulation of where the sun is in the sky, rises and sets. It would rise over the sides of the stadium. It's positioned.
Right.
It's positioned in a different way than the current stadium because of that. Because
I think that's something I'd want to know. Like, am I going to be looking directly into the sun? Is it going to be angled so that it's right in my face? You know, that's something you could even, you would know now just from being used to the stadium. At least I would. like on the visitor side is where you're more likely going to be in, like, yeah, the sun's going to be in your face.
Right.
On the visitor side. If you would prefer shade, you want the home side.
We haven't been in the new stadium for a tour in a couple of weeks, and we hope to go soon so we can kind of tell everybody a little bit about this. But my views of it, having, you know, walked the concourses, you're looking so much steeper, so much more down.
Yeah.
And there's also, in the current stadium, there's all that open air. Like, if you're looking out one side of it, you can see, you know, the city. You can see it. When you're sitting up top, you can see the lake. You can see the city. You can see everything up there because it's so open. Now, in the new stadium, if you want to see those things, you'll have to do that from the concourse or maybe the last row because the whole thing is enclosed.
But you're also going to be higher up, so you're going to have a better view of it.
Maybe.
There'll be decks and stuff.
No.
Bar areas, right,
to do excited. That. It is kind of wild. Like, a year from now, you'll be planning to go to the Bills preseason game, if they're going to do a preseason game there, which I think they're going to do, right?
They probably will want it even just for the run-through, right?
Right. That's something I've got on the list of things to talk about with the Bills and Sabres COO is what potential could there be for run-ups to games and all that kind of stuff.
So, yep.
I've got a story, a football story, that see how this hits you. It's from college football.
Okay. This starts soon.
This falls into, this is where I am not always of the most of the popular opinion here.
Okay.
But I am staunchly in this corner and ready to tell all of you, I told you so. Here's another example. Actually, I believe Carrington Harrison's calling right now. Okay. We'll get to this on the other side.
All right.
After Carrington, we're going to talk to the Carrington Harrison here. And when we get to the other side, I'm going to tell you about how the ACC and the and ESPN are going to air replay booth audio. You will hear the official.
This is not one of your.
You will hear the official talking about what he's looking at.
All right.
While they watch the replay. So that in a moment. But joining us on the Western Hotline, Carrington Harrison, who talks Chiefs, and you've heard him on our airwaves before. We talk every year, multiple times. Carrington, good morning. It's Jeremy and Joe.
Hey, how you guys doing? I'm going to tell you one thing. That ACC thing is not going to be nearly as cool as you think it's going to be. It sounds amazing, and then we'll see. It will be a big bag of nothing.
Yeah.
That does feel like whenever the UFL has done this, or even when it was the USFL, that is usually how it kind of comes off.
Well, spoiler, on my take on this, Carrington, I hate replay. I hate that it's become a star of the show. I hate rules analysts. And I don't think that we actually do want to hear these people talking about it, because when they get the call wrong, you'll just be more upset when you hear this official saying, like, I don't think there's conclusive evidence. Now that you actually hear the words, you're just going to be more upset about it.
I will actually give you two of my sports hot takes this morning before we get to the Chiefs and the Bills. My number one hot sports take is I think March Madness is overrated and people like it because it's one of the few sporting events that happen while we're at work. And my second one is we were all happier before instant replay. Like, we have this perception that they'll get the calls right. They get the same number of calls right and wrong as they did before, but now it just takes them 30 minutes to get to the wrong answer, where we just instantly got to the wrong answer.
Well, we are closely aligned on that. I can't stand that these games are ground to a halt for a rules analyst to tell you what you see with your own eyes. But anyway, Carrington, we had you on to talk about the Chiefs. Of course, we're deep in Bills training camp. The story here so far is a lot of injuries, and James Cook has just become a big-time story for sitting out a couple of practices, and we're waiting to see where that goes. What's the story at Chiefs camp? What is going on in Kansas City to bounce back off a pretty rough Super Bowl loss? And what's really been the overarching theme to kind of getting back on top?
I would say there's been two themes so far at Chiefs camp. Number one has been continuity. I mean, the Chiefs are the same as they were last year. Like, all of the research that you did for the last Chiefs and Bills game, they're the same. Like, right now on defense, the only difference is they don't have Justin Reed. Everybody else is back from last year's defense other than Justin Reed. For the most part, their offense, skill position players are the same. So that's number one. Number two is Josh Simmons, the left tackle out of Ohio State. I think a lot of people thought that he was going to be kind of a redshirt this season. It doesn't appear that way. He has taken every snap as the starting left tackle for the Chiefs. He was number one on their first depth chart. I think he's going to be their starting left tackle come opening night against the Chargers in Brazil. So those have been the two storylines. People are really high on Josh Simmons. He's had a very strong camp. And second, just in continuity, the Chiefs are the same as they were last year.
To that point, Carrington, when you look back at the Super Bowl, was it about the Eagles and what they did, or was it to you a little bit more about the Chiefs had a truly fatal flaw with their offensive line that a team was finally able to kind of break open?
I think it was a little bit of everything. I think it was easy to kind of put everything on the offensive line. This is something that I think the text line and my listeners kind of disagree with me on. I think the Eagles are one of the few teams that have the ability to take advantage of what the Chiefs kind of struggled with last year. The Chiefs only really had one speed option and one guy that could get open. I think the Eagles got really physical up front with the Chiefs, and the Chiefs just didn't like it. And I think it was kind of one of those things where, you know, the Chiefs kind of know how hard Buffalo hits. They play Buffalo often. They know how hard Baltimore hits. I think they got hit pretty hard by the Eagles and hadn't been hit that hard in a long time. And I think they kind of went into a shock. And you wake up, and next thing you know, it's 21-0, and the Chiefs, everything was kind of unraveling. And all of the worst things that could happen happened to the Chiefs. So it is going to be interesting. Those two teams play in week two of the season. The Eagles are largely the same as they were last year, and the Chiefs are. So it's going to be a really interesting test to kind of see where Kansas City is this season.
How much of that improved offensive line is kind of up to Simmons, who was a late first-round pick and right at the end? And really, like, that was an injury, right, Carrington? If you could take us back to the draft on his draft stock going down. Otherwise, I feel like I remember, if I can think back to that time, that if the injuries didn't exist, that he was a guy that might have gone even in the top half of the first round.
Yeah, so he actually broke his patella in college, so he didn't finish out his career at Ohio State. So a lot of people feel if he had been healthy, he'd have been a top 10, top 15 pick, and he just kind of fell towards the Chiefs. You know, one of my arguments while the draft process was going on is if you're the Chiefs and you need a left tackle, you know, you're never going to be in a position to take Tristan Wirfs. You're never going to be in a position to take Rashawn Slater or one of those kind of prospects. So if you feel like this guy would have been the 12th overall pick, you got to take the chance and just hope that you can trust your medical staff to get him back to 100%. And that's what happened. I mean, their right side of the offensive line is the same as it's been. Their center, right guard, they paid both of them, Creed Humphrey and Trey Smith. Their right tackle is the same. The left side is what's different. Kingsley Suamataia, who was a second-round pick a couple of years ago, he's going to likely start at left guard. And then Josh Simmons. So, I mean, Josh Simmons is the new addition for this team. Like, honestly, go through their depth chart for the Super Bowl and then what they just put out there. It is the same team. The only noticeable difference is that they have that Joe Tooney now plays for the Bears, and they have replaced him essentially with Josh Simmons from Ohio State.
Carrington Harrison joining us on the Western Hotline. Carrington, is that offense going to get back to the top? I mean, this is a team that has been very successful with an offense that didn't quite measure up to years prior. Viewing from here, it looked like 2 years in a row the offense was gettable. How do you feel about their offense this year? Will there be an improvement?
I think a lot of it depends on the health of their wide receivers. The Chiefs just love 5'9", 180-pound wide receivers, which are really good when they're running around and flying and making plays. But you got to play 20 weeks of football. Like, if you factor in the Chiefs in the regular season and go into the postseason, Hollywood Brown breaks down sometimes. Xavier Worthy was on the concussion protocol so far during training camp. Rashee Rice tore his knee last year, and we're kind of waiting to see when he ultimately gets suspended. So I think the big thing, and this is the point that I've made on my show, is, you know, having those big explosive plays, they come from having explosive players. Burrow has T. Higgins and Ja'Marr Chase, so it's easy to have those big splash down the field kind of plays. You know, the Chiefs, when Patrick Mahomes was at his strongest, you had the best version of Tyreek Hill and the best version of Travis Kelce. When you've lost those two things, Mahomes is still obviously very productive, but you're going to lose a lot of that pop, a lot of that sizzle, because they just don't have the healthy weapons to kind of produce that. So I think the hope is if you can keep some guys healthy, you bring Rashee Rice back off suspension, Xavier Worthy in year two, can they keep Hollywood healthy and get him back a productive run game with Isaiah Pacheco? There's certainly a lot of high hopes for what the offense can be this season.
What about Kelce? Travis Kelce last year, 133 targets, still like very involved, obviously. But the efficiency's come down a little bit, and he's 35, so that would be expected. He'll be 36 this season. I don't know. Do you feel like there's a wind down coming for Kelce, or do you think he's still going to be a guy that we look up and see, you know, maybe he's not putting up, you know, 1,400 yards like he used to, but he'll still be 100-plus targets?
Yeah, I kind of feel like if Travis Kelce has that many targets, that means something went wrong. I don't think that was the plan last year, but injuries kind of led them to that point. So I've kind of felt this way for a couple of years, and I think it's bearing in the stats. Football's not made to be played at 35, 36, not at a high level. So I think at this point, I kind of look at him like a basketball player where I just want Kelce to knock down threes and play good defense. And you really just need him for the postseason. Can he be Al Horford for you? He doesn't need to be your star, but can he be your third or fourth option? Again, just knock down a couple of shots, play good defense, be available for the postseason. That's where I think we are in Kelce's career. He's just not – he's not fast enough to run by people anymore the way that he used to. He's not athletic enough to kind of break free. He's kind of just turned into that really smart veteran who just works the middle of the field, and is still very productive in what he does, but he's not the Kelce of 2-3 years ago.
Carrington Harrison joining us on the Western Hotline, talking Chiefs. Finally, you know, you've seen the Bills off season. I mean, the Bills don't always look at the Chiefs and say, what do we got to do to beat them? You know, I don't know. How do you feel like the AFC plays out? Are there three big dogs again? Are you ready to entertain a fourth? Is L.A. going to get there, the Chargers? Are the Broncos going to be there? Or are we looking at the same three big dogs we had the last couple seasons?
I've denounced Justin Herbert and all his works. Justin Herbert is the least accomplished quarterback of his entire era. Like, all of the quarterbacks who are around him, he has done the absolute least. He's fooled me way too many times in my life. I refuse to believe in Justin Herbert. I'm with you. I still think it's those same three teams. I also think we're all kind of waiting to see how good Denver can possibly be. I think Denver kind of surprised some people last year. They might have the best defense of any team in the AFC. I really like their draft. So I think we're all kind of waiting to see if Denver's ready to take that next step and go from being a 9-10 win team to an 11-12 win team and put themselves in that conversation. But, yeah, for the most part, I think it's the same AFC that we've seen the last handful of seasons. It's Kansas City, Baltimore, and Buffalo, and we're all trying to figure it out. I actually think Buffalo should be the one seed in the AFC. You have Baltimore and Kansas City both at home this year, and you look at Buffalo's schedule. Buffalo's schedule is a 13, 14, 15 win schedule. Buffalo should be the one seed this year in the AFC.
That's the plan. Carrington, thanks again. We'll talk a couple months, maybe sooner. We'll see.
Absolutely. I appreciate you guys.
All right. Carrington Harrison, host of The Drive in Kansas City, covering the Chiefs. Got that ACC ESPN story. I also just found something I have to bring this up.
What happened?
So, you know how this goes. I'm going to offer you something, and I don't know, not just you, Owen, Josh, everybody here. I'm going to offer you a trade that has been suggested by the Athletic NFL staff.
Okay.
I want to know how fast you're going to say yes to this trade.
Okay.
So the article is Terry McLaurin trade proposals. You're already in.
I'm in.
You're already in.
Scary Terry. No, go ahead.
Five potential offers for the Commanders. And it's not just teams, but what
they would offer on top of it?
Yes.
Okay.
Patriots. Third round pick for McLaurin.
I mean, they should do that in a heartbeat. I know they paid Diggs a lot, but come on.
49ers. Ayuk for McLaurin. Chargers.
Should they trade Ayuk for McLaurin? Ayuk is still, what, 5 years younger than him?
And he is, if he's healthy,
I don't think I would do that.
He tore his ACL. He is an elite receiver.
I think I'd bet on Ayuk getting back. I wouldn't do that if I'm the Niners.
Okay. Chargers, 2026 fourth-round pick for McLaurin.
Yes. Wait, how come they're giving up a fourth, but New England's giving up a third?
Maybe, I don't know, whatever.
All right,
New England's a little worse, maybe.
The more desperate.
Steelers, third-round pick and Roman Wilson for McLaurin.
Sure, yeah. Easily.
And then the final offer. Presented by the Athletic NFL staff. Bills. Curtis Samuel and a fifth.
Can we hammer some sort of button here?
Curtis Samuel and a fifth. If they traded Curtis Samuel and a fifth for Terry McLaurin today, what would everybody do?
Stop. We can't do that.
Celebrate like it would be like parading.
That'd be our celebration. We're not about that life anymore.
That's the button we'd all smash to say yes to that trade.
Who would be happy? Who would not be happy?
I mean, he's not going to get traded for a third or a fifth.
Throw the bean sunglasses meme on City Hall if they make that trade. A fifth and Curtis Samuel.
Grain elevators if they do that.
What on earth?
Right. Every building. Replace all flags on all flagpoles with a cutout of the bean sunglasses meme.
It was like the Josh Allen Gatorade banner. You can see it from Canada. You got to have a bean one like that.
Yes.
Have a big one like that.
What an offer.
What an offer.
What, I do not anticipate. Fire your GM if you're the Commanders if you do that.
Yeah, what is the explanation for all of those being so low is what? That's his age?
That he's old and he needs a deal. And that when this happens, they go for cheap.
That is not... The problem here is, though, McLaurin just had a giant year. Last season, when the Bills traded Diggs for a second, one thing that I went back and looked at was... That was actually really good value for a wide receiver of that age. If you go back 10 years...
That wants to get paid.
And look at receivers that need a contract that are 30. Those guys do not fetch much. Like Brandon Marshall went for a fifth to the Jets or something. Like, there's a lot of examples of guys that go for nothing. The Bills getting a second for Diggs was actually like one of the highest. There was like one, maybe Julio Jones was the only one that went for more, to Tennessee. Like, everyone else went for cheap. So I get that, but McLaurin just had his best season, right? Doesn't that make it a... That would, to me, I would think make it a little different than all those other situations.
Half the reason that Samuel, maybe most of the reason, is included in this offer...
Well, he would have to be.
They need some cap space to do it.
Yeah.
And they would have to do other things as well, and Bean just told us, like, you know, everybody says, yeah, do this, do this, do this, do this, yeah. When you ask them about Parsons.
Right.
So part of the question I would want to ask you is... If the Commanders were thinking like, yeah, you know, Diggs for a second, that was it. All right, well, if we're going to go to Buffalo, he's going to need some space. So, sure, Curtis Samuel and a third.
Mm-hmm.
Who says no? Bean would have to get to work on 25, 26 and start to restructure and move. He'd have to get to work.
Fit it in.
And, of course, you do that.
And then you have to extend and pay a wide receiver who's 30.
Right, which when you already have Palmer now for a couple years at 11, and you do dump Samuel.
How does it work?
It doesn't work because...
Well, how does it work on the field? He comes in, and that's not a problem. That's amazing. He's going to play, and he's going to be great. How does the rest of it work? You're just going to line up McLaurin and... See, this. You have four guys now that you have a good investment in. McLaurin, you'll have a ton of invested in with money.
Shakir extended.
Palmer. Coleman is a draft pick, and Palmer is a signing.
Right.
So McLaurin would go to the top, but you would have it would. You know what I mean? Like it would be a lot of guys, a lot of mouths to feed suddenly that you would feel like you have to feed, as opposed to now where it's just like, you know, everybody kind of can have whatever they want because there's no top dog.
Right. They've kind of clogged it up to a point. They might not need any help in this department by next year.
But he would make them better.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean,
he would definitely make them better.
Yes.
Debo Samuel got traded for a fifth this offseason.
Right,
so basically, it would be, almost be like they would have traded McLaurin for Debo Samuel, which to me is a terrible trade.
Terrible.
That's a terrible trade at this point.
But again, I don't anticipate that. If the Patriots get him and it's McLaurin and Diggs. By the way, see, Mac Hollins wore his vintage shirt with the cuts in it.
Yeah.
It's fun to watch the New England media go through all of the steps that we went through. Like, look at this guy doesn't wear shoes.
Did I see someone?
Look at the shirt that he's wearing.
Did I see someone reference, though, that maybe Patriots fans aren't reacting to him the same way Bills fans did? Let me find that before I go any deeper on that. I thought I saw a reference to New England fans not taking in Mac Hollins the way Bills fans did, which was all fun and games and, you know.
Yeah.
Anyways.
We wondered about Mac Hollins until he started, you know, producing. Like, all right, sure. Show up to the game dressed like Fred Flintstone. He did that.
Yeah. There's Patriots, like the first one, don't want him on the team.
803-0550.
And then some other things that I wouldn't say in the air.
All right, to this, well, I mean, they're Patriots fans, so, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The story about the ACC and ESPN and replay, more replay you don't want coming your way.
That one steps up. Jumps over the defenders to pick up the first. Now, how many quarterbacks have you ever seen hurdle anyone?
Nobody.
That might be a first.
Oh, my goodness. What's this?
This is a freak play.
Oh, okay.
No way.
Happy trails, as they used to say on PTI, maybe still do, to Anthony Barr.
I mean, this is cruel. This is cruel.
You get jumped over.
The man was a four-time Pro Bowler and just had a 10-year career. He says so long, and all of the internet right now is like, hey, remember the time you got jumped over?
He was the first victim.
He was the first victim.
Josh Allen jumping over people.
Poor Anthony Barr.
Anthony Barr. Mm-hmm.
Now, right. How was he supposed to know? We didn't know that was in there.
No, that's right.
Nobody knew that he was about to do anything like that.
We found out that day.
We found out together with Anthony Barr, and yet he's the one who's going to get mocked.
That was also the second most impressive play from Allen in that game.
The second most impressive? He did like a Superman dive for a touchdown, right?
A full-on Superman dive with the ball out like Cam Newton. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
That game, they rolled. Diggs is on that Minnesota team, right?
Yes.
There's a Jason Kroom touchdown in that game where he's wide open.
Total coverage bust, yep.
Bills were 17 point dogs. Yeah.
Yeah.
Best game of that year? Easily, right? Most fun game of that year?
What year is that?
2018, Allen's rookie year. Gotta be.
Yeah, 2019 was the full coming out party.
Not quite. Like, they make the playoffs, but Allen's not great yet. He's fine. He's good. He's fine.
Isn't 2019 where they have the games against the Rams?
No, it's 20.
That's 2020?
2020. 2019 is like, Allen's pretty good, but we're not all the way there yet. They're a playoff team. He loses his mind in the Houston playoff game.
Yeah.
2020 is, okay, this dude is like a superstar.
Yeah. His rookie season, so Vikings 27-6. The next week, they lost 22-0. Then they beat the Titans.
Green Bay?
Yes.
Yeah.
Allen goes out with the injury. They don't score any touchdowns. Matt Barkley went in, right, in New York against the Jets, or is that an Allen game? I'll have to pull that.
There's a Peterman game in that season against Chicago.
41-9.
The infamous Hail Mary at the end of the first half that he decides to take off.
He ran.
60 yards.
He ran.
Oh, he was such a gift. Still playing. He's on Atlanta.
Good for him.
It's incredible.
So, story from the college football world and ESPN. The ESPN and ACC are going to be airing booth reviews live with audio. This fall, the ACC and its longtime television partner are rolling out a new initiative, bringing fans directly into the replay booth. Oh, it's just what I've always wanted. Starting this season. This is from awfulannouncing.com and via David Teal of the Virginian Pilot. Friday night ACC games and ACC Network's primetime Saturday broadcasts will let viewers hear the real-time deliberations between the on-field referee, the press box replay official, and the league's command center.
Uh-huh.
More. They tested this late last year, and they kind of thought, like, wait a minute. What if... And according to Teal, the idea surfaced during a routine ACC ESPN production meeting. Someone posed a simple question. What if ESPN rules analyst Matt Austin could actually hear the officials' conversations during replay reviews and explain them to the audience in real time? So again,
is this because there were Miami last
year? Yes, there's a Hail Mary play.
There were a couple of games I feel like where everyone was accusing the ACC of propping up Miami with calls to get them in the playoff.
I'm not the only one. I know I'm not the only one, but just look at what has happened to your consciousness here. The rules of analysts exist to say to you. Mm-hmm. As you watch 1 foot come down in bounds, say, you know, guys, I only see 1 foot. Oh, thanks, Matt. Now, the concept is, what if a rules analyst could hear the conversations of the official and the replay and tell you what it means? So now, I'll get an official saying, yeah, you know, I'm not seeing a conclusive ruling here. And then the rules analyst will say, folks, he's saying he doesn't see a conclusion. Oh yeah,
we are still going to get the rules analyst?
Yes.
Because to me, I was getting the rules analyst replaced with what we're hearing from the rules officials, that would be better to me. That would be better. I don't want this guy deciphering what they're talking about. Give me, instead of him talking for 20 seconds, I would rather have the actual conversation for 20 seconds and then the play-by-play and color guy talk about it after. But if I'm getting the real conversation, and then I'm still getting the rules analyst.
Who's going to deliberate?
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
Well, it's all ridiculous because just like Dean Blandino in the XFL, nobody actually gets anything out of this that's any good. You are still going to hate the call. Now what you're going to have is four people discussing the call that you think should be overturned, and they're going to tell you why they didn't overturn it, and you're still going to be mad. You're probably going to be more mad about it.
I was going to say the only time it'll ever be interesting is if you hear a screw up on like that. I'm thinking of, like, there's a soccer example of this because they have this in the Premier League, like after the fact, where they'll tell you the VAR conversations. A couple years ago, there was a Liverpool game where there was a goal that the ref had overturned on offsides, and the VAR conversation was, "Hey, that's actually a good goal." And, like, they reviewed it, good goal. The ref misunderstood and thought he said no goal. So he started the play back up.
Yeah.
No goal. And then right after you hear the VAR go, "Oh, no, wait, no, it's a goal." And they're like, "Oh, it's too late."
Right.
And that
caused... We can't just put a number on the board.
But what did that do? That just caused a circus after the fact. I got 10 times more mad because now I know, like, what happened there.
Right.
And that's the only time it'll ever be interesting.
The other...
I think. Right. I think that's the only time.
The other scenario could be interesting.
I mean...
Is if they're discussing it, and then they go to the rules analyst, and the rules analyst like, "Guys, that's not the rule."
Oh, like he goes, like, but yeah. Man, those guys do not step out.
Guys,
like that.
That's not the rule.
Those analysts do not step out.
Can
like
a
that.
Rules analyst possibly, again, when they bring a rules analyst on for a often completely worthless 30 seconds of analysis, they're just saying like, "It's really close, guys. I guess they don't see XYZ." Now that rules analyst is going to say, "Well, I mean, you heard it. He said they don't see XYZ." I did.
Well, let's play this out, because really this is the version. This is the ACC's version of the refs help the Chiefs, right? Like Miami for them last year was this. Like Miami was top of the conference. They were in a playoff spot. And it's like the ACC wants Miami in the playoff. And so all the other ACC teams. I remember Eric Wood talking about this with him before one of the Bills games last year. He's the Louisville guy. Like, "Oh yeah, they're giving Miami the calls." And it was hard to argue. Like, they were some ridiculous calls. That's the Chiefs. So let's play it out. This is in the NFL, last year in the AFC Championship game. How do we think it goes? They're reviewing Allen's QB sneak. How do we think it goes? They're going to go to the booth, and then what are we going to hear?
"I don't see conclusive evidence that he made the line to gain." And then what do we do?
And there probably is more talking about it than that. Like, would you get one guy going, "Ah, I don't know, he might be passed." The other guy like, "I don't know if he is."
That's worse.
And then they go, "Well, I guess it's inconclusive."
Imagine if it's a vote, 3-1. Wait, that guy saw.
Oh man, you mentioned voting in the these calls.
It's worse. Every further step we go into more replay and more finger quotes transparency is worse. We do not want this, but we're gonna get it. Do not want.
I will say I would rather have this than the rules analyst. I don't want both. I guess if I could have none of them, I'd probably take none of them. But if I'm going to get one thing, I'd rather have the 20 seconds of what's going on in the replay booth rather than the rules analyst guessing at what's going on in the replay booth. I'd rather have that.
Scott writes into me, "I'd love this for the NHL. I have a deep distrust for how they do things and love transparency there."
There, I think you would get on a nightly basis them looking like fools. So I would like that too.
It would just be, "Listen, we don't even need this. If you want to, just call me, and I'll say, oh, yeah, hey, yeah, oh, hold on, turn the game on, flip on the channel. Yeah, the guy didn't see enough evidence to overturn it. Thanks, bye." That's the whole thing. This isn't mysterious.
It's just the pool report that we get after that's useless, but in real time.
Why didn't they overchange it? They didn't think they had to. They didn't think there was enough. What did they see out there? Not the thing you wanted them to see. It's still just... Yeah. Except now it's just all these voices. And these delays, aren't they going to go longer? Aren't they going to feel like, let's have a conversation? We're not keeping people
won't do it as an act.
No, it's no longer keeping people in the dark. Now it's, hey, we're on camera. We're going to make sure we talk over every single possible point of this. We're going to make sure they know we're thorough. These will be 4-minute delays.
No, they're not going to be. They're going to be the same thing. They're putting a mic in, right? You think they're gonna be forcing conversation because they know they're on television?
Now that they know they are mic'd up, now that they know this is being part of the broadcast, yes. Yes.
I don't know. That part I might be skeptical of. That we're gonna get longer. They're not gonna want longer delays. Unless it's presented by blank.
Oh,
this rules conversation. This replay review was presented by Duke's Mayo.
You don't think every one of those officials out there dreams of being the next Gene Steratore? You too could be on every single NFL broadcast. Shout out Gene Steratore. All right.
Don't watch the ACC this year.
I mean,
that's tough for you.
It is.
Is this just the ACC games on ESPN?
Yes, in like primetime windows.
But most of their games are on ESPN, and there's ACC Network, which isn't that run by ESPN also?
Yeah.
So basically, that's all your Syracuse games this year.
Pretty much.
Okay.
Extendo Sports and then Sal's Up with the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We're out at training camp tomorrow. Two more days of camp left at St. John Fisher. Then they break camp to come back to Buffalo to start the preseason. Jeremy and Joe, Extendo Sports coming up on WGR.
Breaking sports news airs first here, guaranteed. WGR Sports Radio 550, 2020 Sports.
Extendo Sports.
Were you a fan at all of the original Naked Gun movie?
Not really.
No?
Not a fan, but just not... It's not in my,
not in your wheelhouse?
Yeah, I'm not quoting it.
So then you would have no interest in seeing the new one?
Very, 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 very little.
It's just so weird to me that Liam Neeson is in a comedy and is going to make this switch from action star, where every movie looks the same, basically, for the last 10 years, to he's now going to do comedy. But I go by Rotten Tomatoes for a lot of this, 90%.
People like it.
Yeah. Which is surprising to me, but it's not a movie I've also ever seen, so it would be very new to me, I think. It's like slapstick comedy, isn't it? Like dumb comedy, kind of?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, slapstick, I think, is the word you're looking for.
All right.
Slapstick.
Pamela Anderson also in it. I think they're dating now. Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson. That's the thing.
Okay.
I don't know. Twitter. But my Twitter the last couple days is Liam Neeson and Pamela Anderson and Des Bryant and Nicki Minaj fighting about Jerry Jones. That's Twitter in the last 48 hours.
We need football to start so bad. We just need football. Let's go.
Quarterback passing stats in training camp. Connor Hughes just tweeted out Justin Fields' last three practices, 2 of 10, 4 of 16, 2 of 6.
Doesn't sound great.
No. It also probably isn't meaningful at all.
Sal's coming up at top of the hour. He'll have John Scott from Channel 2. Mm-hmm. And
Pete Lembo, also head coach of the UB Bulls.
UB Bulls head coach Pete Lembo at 11:30.
Who I saw have a 7.5 win total for this season.
Oh.
It's pretty good.
Good for them.
Syracuse is not that high.
No, their schedule is very difficult. Syracuse is.
Tennessee's the opening game. UB opens on the 28th at night at Minnesota. And I've already seen, like, it was Pete Thamel, maybe. It was one of the national guys. Like, this is one of your upsets for week one. UB at Minnesota. That's a mid-Big Ten team that they could definitely beat.
They played there before.
Minnesota?
Yeah.
Recently?
In the last however many years, UB fans would know.
Okay.
They played there before. Speaking of the 28th, that is the day the rivalries uniforms come out.
And
you know what I think would be a fun kind of idea? Is if the NFL allowed teams to sell the rivalry uniforms before you see them. Like $10 off, you buy it right now.
They would get leaked immediately, though.
No, you don't get it.
Oh.
Just, you want to buy it?
Oh, without knowing what it looks like.
Just, you know the concept, you know the themes. Okay. You've seen Josh Allen like a frozen zombie, Game of Thrones, blah. $10 off, you buy it right now.
Interesting.
I buy that jersey. I am confident that it's going to be great.
All right.
I am...
That's not a bad idea.
I've been wrong before. Yeah, right now, $10, pre-sale.
Man, you could get some mad fans, though, if it stunk. Imagine 10 years ago, the Sabres did that promotion, and then you see the yellow jersey.
You might want a refund. Yeah, that's right. All right, sales on the way. Tomorrow, we are back at St. John Fisher. For Bills training camp, we'll be speaking with Bills head coach Sean McDermott. And we expect like the 9 o'clock hour. Big show from training camp tomorrow. Joe Marino, Sal Mariano, Sal Capaccio. Yeah, big show. So back from Fisher tomorrow as we get closer and closer to the end of camp.